Welcome to another edition of Summer is Coming. I'm your host, Tiny Grimes, and I'm joined today by the illustrious...
Dark Nodge.
And why do they call you the illustrious Dark Nodge?
Well, since you just coined the phrase this very moment, I'd have to ask you.
Well, we'll just move on from there. Alright, so I'm sure everyone has noticed by now that the second chapter pack in the newest cycle has dropped, The Great Fleet. And Dark Nodge, I know you were really excited about the last chapter pack. Is this one as exciting as the first one in the cycle?
It's not as exciting, but it definitely has some really exciting cards. And I think, looking at this chapter pack, I'd say Greyjoy definitely now has a solid naval deck, a black sails deck that they can put together, and that's exciting.
Yes, I can assure you that is the case. I've been playing that deck almost exclusively. It's one of those decks that basically just punches you right in the face, and if you don't have a way to handle that, you lose really fast, because the claim is so high that all your characters die without me having to do anything other than winning one singular military challenge.
Well, how about we talk about the cards, and then maybe we can talk a little bit more about the deck you're playing.
Oh, it's a super secret regional deck. I'm sure no one has figured out that you can put naval characters in the deck and make it good.
Let's share that tech with our listeners later.
Okay. So I'm going to start with my favorite card of the pack, and that is the Battle for the Shield Islands. Now, the reason this is my favorite card in the pack is because it gives us more versatility. I am sick of playing city plots. The city plots are okay. They're decent control, but against something like Targ Burn, that control is pretty much pointless. Your opponent knows what plots you're playing in the entirety of your deck. If they're not playing a House of Dreams card, you are playing an entire plot cycle just to be able to blow away one not that great location potentially and control some characters on the board, which they know is coming, so they can just not play guys, let you do your kneeling plots, then play them or have some other tricks. They know everything you're going to do. This card gets around that. Essentially, it's an epic battle card that says after the dominance phase this round, there's an epic phase during which each player may initiate a single challenge of his choice. Characters with one or more naval enhancements may be declared as attackers or defenders while kneeling. Instead of the normal claim, the winner of each challenge may choose and take control of a location controlled by the losing opponent. So basically what that means is since it's claim replacement, you can hit a House of Dreams location. And why this is amazing? It's not just good in a naval deck. It's amazing in a naval deck, but you could still put it in a Targ Jumper deck, jump a dude in at the end of challenges, go into dominance with your standing guy, win your challenge, steal their House of Dreams location. You don't have to run the city plots anymore.
Yeah, I really like this card too, and it's great utilization of some of the old concepts. We haven't seen epic battles for a little while. I really like that they're coming back. You know, Stark Siege is going to be excited about this card. We see a good integration with the new naval icon at the same time. We have a solution to House of Dreams. I think the developers really thought this epic battle through, and it's very nicely designed.
Yes, I agree. I love this card. If nothing else, just for versatility. So what's your favorite card in the pack?
Yeah, it is, however, not my favorite card. It's actually tied in second place with Ironborn Marauders. But my first is definitely Naval Superiority. And the reason it's my first is actually the wow factor. You know, opening the pack, you're going through them, and you look at this card, and you go, oh, I can get a claim 3. This is cool. And all of a sudden you're thinking, oh, how many naval enhancements can I get on the board? Can I get multiple claim 3s in a single challenge round or phase? You start going, yeah, probably with these conditions. And the plot's really interesting because it just brings a ton of kick to those decks that are going to be moving towards, you know, black sails and naval. What do you think of the plot?
This was one of those plots that when I first saw it, I thought, okay, should we restrict it now or tomorrow? Because this is the most broken plot in the history of the game. Then I took a step back, took a deep breath, looked at my black sails deck and realized, oh, I only have military guys. So now it's just a really, really good 3 gold, 3 claim plot. The only 3 claim plot we have is absolutely terrible in focused offense. So just in that regard, getting 1-3 claim challenge is really good. I mean, the plot is amazing, but it's not to me the level where it must be insta-restricted like I initially had thought.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think, you know, there's lots of ways to control those characters, but it's a very shiny plot. And because of that, it's my favorite card. You know, there's just so much fun that you can have with this plot. And, you know, a lot of people are talking about it being always your opening plot. It doesn't need to be your opening plot. Anytime you can get a three claim challenge in, it's worth playing. So,
yeah, it's funny that you would say that. I have never once used it as my opening plot.
Me neither. And I've been playing a couple Black Sails deck. So that's my my number one card. And what was your number two card, Tiny?
Well, to be honest, I didn't rate the pack. But I do have a bunch of cards I like in the pack. So another card that struck me when I first saw it is White Harbor Dromon. And this is a location, Stark, 2-cost, challenges Neil White Harbor Dromon to choose a character. Till the end of the phase, that character gets renowned and a naval enhancement on each of its icons. When I first saw this card, I was really impressed by it because I didn't quite understand the full nuance of the naval mechanic. That for most of these mechanics to work, you actually have to jump the character into the battle as a naval attacker, not just have them in with a naval icon. For example, naval superiority will not work if you activate this, put it on a cavalry flank, and then don't kneel them to attack. They have to actually jump in as a naval attacker. But I still think it's a really strong card for Stark. I could see it going in over Frozen Outpost in some of my decks to basically give them the opportunity to give somebody renown like the cavalry flank to put a little bit more power grabbing into the deck. If you're running a Stark Black Sails, I think this card makes it infinitely more viable. It synergizes really well with naval superiority because you're probably already having guys with a naval icon, the naval enhancement on their military icon. Now say you give Lewin one as well on his intrigue, you get a 3-claim military, you get a 3-claim intrigue. That's pretty much game over if you can pull both of those off in one turn.
Yeah, I see this as a really great power grab card for sure. Just giving the renown is good. The naval enhancements are like this awesome bonus. At 2-cost, I'm not quite sure just renown, but it's pretty decent.
Yeah, I agree. I think at the 2-cost point, I would have to be doing something else with it. And that's where I don't think at this moment I'm splashing it into every Stark deck. But I'm certainly going to build a Stark deck with something like the Corsair Smugglers from the last pack to give a little bit more draw, put the armies in, maybe put in 2 more guys, and then use naval superiority and get some of the benefits from the naval mechanic.
Yeah, for sure. My next card is actually the Ironborn Marauder. This is, to me, awesome because he's a really good chud. 2-cost, 2 icons. The military has the naval enhancement, the power has nothing, but it's his traits that really make him awesome. Ironborn and Raider. Fills in a lot of gaps, both in the Raider deck. Ironborn's always good to trigger some of your cancel effects. I really like him. For 2-cost, he's well-costed, and I think he's very good.
Yeah, I immediately just stuck 2 of them in my Greyjoy's Black Sails deck. Because 2-cost is, to me, a little bit high for a Chud in Greyjoy when you have 1-cost Boatswains, you have 0-cost Refugees, assuming since there's nothing else good on the restricted list, you're running them. So you already have 6 0 and 1-cost Chuds. You could run Fish Whiskers for 7. So my thought is Greyjoy is like the one house, maybe along with Stark, that a 2-cost Chud is actually kind of expensive for a Chud. But you're right, his traits are really good, and giving him that naval enhancement is so useful. So you can do things like this. You attack with your Carrion Bird, you have out Victarion, you have him out, you have that naval smuggler out, and your opponent just kind of looks at it and goes, well, I can't win this period. And so the challenge math gets all crazy. It's like they have to figure out how many guys do I want them to kneel on the attack for me to still lose. And so no matter how much they put in, they're going to lose because they all have this cool naval mechanic. And that works out really well for a 2-cost Chud.
Yeah, and I really like the Raider trait here because I felt that Raiders, you know, were a theme that they were trying to develop but wasn't quite there yet. But I can really see kind of a Raider Black Sails deck coming from this. You know, you can use some of the Raider reducers, maybe bring out the big Raider army for some unopposed snuck in there. I think there's a lot of potential here and a lot of good, you know, good ideas for deck building.
I agree, especially since you can go get whatever you need from the hold, and so you can get, you know, whatever card it is that's going to get you even more discard. If you get close to that magical moment, maybe you could even run the Brass Link and go get that from your hold and just stick it on Wendemir just for some extra discard. That hold just gives you so many more opportunities for all these cool Shaga decks, and it does feel like there's a viable Raider deck. Yeah, I saw a deck running the House of Dreams Longship Grief, which was pretty viable.
You know, for me, Raiders aren't about discard normally. When I build, you know, my better Raider decks aren't ones that are focused on discard. They're ones that are more focused on, you know, unopposed challenges, big military claim, that kind of stuff. I think we have enough Raiders now that have, you know, the Warcrest that you can use Die by the Sword and stuff in that those types of decks. And that's, you know, a little bit of control that Greyjoy didn't use very often until now.
Yeah, I agree. It's not necessarily about discarding. Like, for instance, with the Longship Grief, it allows your Raiders and Captains to not kneel to attack or defend during the first challenge. So that's just about getting more challenges off without kneeling. There's just a lot of interesting options with Raiders, and discard can be useful, especially to activate Asha and Alanis and things like that.
Yeah, that's the way. That's more where I see the Raiders using their discard for, is to turn on some of those activations. And maybe if you're playing against another Black Sails deck, okay, now you're going to be able to, you know, hit them with discard and reduce their draw in later game. But overall, as a, you know, a big theme, I just don't see it.
Yeah, maybe even with Corpse Lake as well, depending on how much you're relying on that. So, Darknage, what other cards did you like in the pack?
I like the new Quint Martel. You know, he's Lord, Knight, 3-cost, 3-strength military power icon with a nice response. When he dies, you get 2 power. 3-cost for a Bicon with stealth is pretty decent. The response is nice. 2 positive traits. Pretty well-rounded card.
I'm glad you said that, because it seems like everyone says that about this card, and I look at this card and I go, blah. Martel has so many cards that are already great, and with all the restrictions, it seems like they're being pushed pretty heavily towards a Knights of the Hollow Hill, Gaston Grey deck. So I feel like a lot of the slots he would go into are already occupied by nobles and by other characters. I actually looked at him and said, I don't really see him going in one of my decks.
Okay. I hear a lot of people talking, you know, we're going to try Martel Knights now. We're going to try, you know, Martel Rush, more like a barrack-centered build. And he can fit in those types of decks. But I can hear what you're saying is that because there's so many good cards basically at his slot already, he's just not as good for Martel.
Yeah, I mean, I love the idea that he's a knight and that that increases the chance of running a Martel Knights deck, but I just don't think Martel Knights are there yet. I'd like to see that build, but I don't think it's a top-tier build yet.
I agree. I don't think they're there yet.
Another card that I found to be overrated is the Reader. Does he look good? Yes. But he's in that 3-cost slot for Greyjoy, which is a really, really tight slot with great cards. So you're running Alanis, who's amazing. Asha is amazing. Baylor Blacktide is amazing. And you're essentially having to slot him in to that spot. And in order for him to be great, you have to win unopposed challenges. And maybe it's just the way I've been running Greyjoy lately with Black Sails and having to put multiple characters into challenges just to win those challenges. He just doesn't seem like he fits that great into a standard Greyjoy build. Now, into an unopposed build, he's great. Because you're basically getting a draw every turn since you're going to have saves. You can keep him alive. He's almost a 3-cost save card. And he does have the naval icon on the Intrigue. So he's good. I'm not saying I don't like him. What I'm saying is I've seen people basically say he's the best card in the pack. I totally love this card. And I look at him and go, yeah, I think he's going to find a home in my Greyjoy decks. But I've never gotten him in my hand and thought, yes, I got the reader. I always think, oh, I wish that was Asha or Alanis.
Yeah, I think he's somewhere below Asha, but just barely. And I think in those Raider theme decks that we were talking about, where you're going to have Intimidate, we're going to get way more unopposed, he's amazing. And, you know, that naval icon on the Intrigue is huge. Mostly because what I've seen so far is that Greyjoy has a lot of naval icons on their military, but not on a lot of their other icons. So I think it's a big deal that he has it on his Intrigue icon.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think in that way he is great. And I'm not saying he's not good. I think people have gone a little overboard with him.
Learn Crest is great too. I've seen people do some silly things with him where, you know, they attack with him and he's non-kneeling because of the plot that says your learn characters, when you initiate an Intrigue attack, don't kneel. And then they re-jump him into the challenge. Obviously, he still just contributes 3 strength, but now he's attacking as a naval character, basically jumping into his own challenge so that they can have some of those naval effects.
That seems like the worst decision ever to play that plot when he's your only book character along with Kerwin.
Well, I think in the games that I've seen people play them, he wasn't their only book character. It just happened that he was the only one out, and out of their plot choices, that was the one they decided to use with their
okay.
Naval agenda.
Quick quiz. Name all the book characters in Greyjoy.
They were playing as their restricted card, the Conclave.
Ah, okay. That's a whole other story then. If you're going to go with a Maester Rush build, then I think it's a great choice. But I'm saying, generally speaking, in Greyjoy, I don't think we're going to see too many...
That type of thing, yeah.
Yeah, too many book shenanigans. Though, it is great that he has a book. The more interesting things he can have on him, the better. And he is Ironborn. And Ironborn is amazing with finger dance.
Yeah. So, the next card for me that I like is Sir Davis. So, we have a 4-cost, which is pretty tough in Baratheon. There's a lot of 4-cost characters. But he's a smuggler, he's a captain, he's got renown, he's got melee, he's got an okay effect in that your smuggler characters will count their strength towards dominance, even when they're knelt. And he's got 2 icons, a military, and here's the big one for me, the intrigue icon. You know, Baratheon, generally, when you're not playing a holy build, has a lot of characters with military and power. And I think having an intrigue, especially on something that has renown, is a nice step forward, because it lets you do things like use Game of Thrones to, you know, get 2 challenges out with this character with renown. And because he is melee, he's going to be very hard to stop. Melee, I think, is one of those underplayed, underutilized keywords that has a lot more strength than people give it credit for.
Yeah, I agree. Especially on a guy who's jumping into a challenge, melee is really cool because it makes the challenge math very, very difficult. But to me, if he was 3-cost, he's an auto-include in every Baratheon deck. At 4, I don't see him making it into any Baratheon deck currently. Now, if there become more smugglers, like when Saladhar Saan comes out, suddenly he starts going into decks. If there's anything that synergizes with a captain trait, I think he goes in. So for me, he's one of those characters that's lingering on the cusp right now, waiting for his traits to be more fleshed out, and then he's going to make it into my builds.
Right. It's one of those characters that shows me a lot of potential, and I'm hoping that the design's going to keep moving that way, where the smugglers are going to have more of this military and intrigue theme, while the, you know, lords and knights will be this military power theme, in that, you know, maybe there's some kind of good mix that you can bring together to have a nice rush deck.
Yeah, and then I think in addition to the rush deck, it might make naval decks pretty decent. Like, he's obviously going to be good in a naval deck, and if they get a whole slew of good smugglers, a naval deck out of Baratheon could become really good. And I'm looking at comboing that with the next card, Black Bertha, the Baratheon unique location, only 1-cost. Response, after you win a challenge in which you have declared a naval attacker, kneel Black Bertha to attach the top card of your discard pile face down to a unique Baratheon character as a duplicate. That seems to me like it could be really strong. One is really cheap. Just splashing this into a naval deck, you could actually go get it out of your hold when you win a challenge. It gives you a lot more resilience against the one card that just crushes Bera, which is Valor.
Yeah, I agree. I like this card. I mean, a lot of people are saying, oh, you know, Bera has a lot of better saves, but when I sit down and start looking at the saves in Bera, I don't see a lot better than this if you have a heavily naval-themed deck.
Yeah, I don't really see any saves in Bera. I mean, you have Fiery Kiss, you have the new plot, but the new plot isn't a save. It's just a way to get a duplicate that's only once per game, most likely. Whereas this, if you get it right away, it's repeatable every single turn. If you throw the word repeatable in front of anything good, you got me.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the big thing. The save is repeatable because you can look at things like Loyal Guard so that if you have like a noble crusted theme, you could use the Loyal Guards to create dupes and stuff. But for, you know, a repeatable save, this is excellent.
Yeah, what I think it's really going to come down to is, does the Bera Smuggler Naval deck have a lot of unique guys, or is it packed full of non-unique naval guys? If it's a lot of unique guys, this card is going to be really strong, because if you combo this with something like Fiery Kiss, where if guys do die early before you can get them duped up, you're bringing them back, and then once you get this online, you're just loading everyone with dupes. I think it's going to be really hard to actually beat Bera with straight claim. You're going to have to do it more the traditional way of controlling them.
Now, we know for sure there's at least two more, you know, smuggler types that are unique that are coming in, Solidar San and the other Seaworthy.
Dale
Seaworthy. So with those two, we know that there's at least two more unique characters coming.
Yes, and that's promising, but I'm still not running a plot for three guys. But if we get a bunch more, and we still are running things like the Laughing Storm and Fat Bob and Melisandre, if that becomes a really viable deck, then I think the Black Bertha with the plot are going to be a really, really powerful combination. The plot being Melisandre Schemes.
Oh, yeah, the plot's fantastic from the last pack. So for me, those were the big cards that I saw in this chapter pack. There was a bunch of other ones that I think of as definitely a lower tier card, and that's why I wasn't excited. Last chapter pack, it was like almost every single card. I was like, ooh, ah. This one, it wasn't as much. Is there any more cards that you really liked, Tiny?
There's a card I really hate, and that's Metal Lark, which is the 2-cost unique Martell location that says, challenges, Neil Metal Lark to choose a challenge icon. Each character in play loses all enhancements on that icon. Now, if it said, for the phase, I think this is a really good meta card. As it is, I don't like the fact that if Naval becomes good at all, Martell can just run this and basically win the game from this one silver bullet that they can run that takes out an entire deck type with just kneeling one card.
Yeah, you know, honestly, I didn't think of it quite the way you're describing here, but you're absolutely correct. You can literally just shut down Black Sails.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting. I'm hoping that was a mistake, and it was supposed to be for the phase, and an errata will be soon issued. But my fear is that that was not the case. And if it's not, you basically have one chance to newly made Lord this card, because if they get it off and you've got Victarion out or some other really important naval guy, that's it. They just do not have that for the rest of the game.
I mean, they'll kneel it right after playing it, so you won't even have that chance.
It is a challenges phase action, which is
good. Oh, you're right, yeah. So they would have to wait till challenges.
Yeah.
Wow.
But that's a bit disconcerting to me that card could be floating around the meta.
The card that I liked the least, I didn't really think, like I said, through Metal Lark, but Longship Golden Storm. This card is Greyjoy, 2-cost, warship. Your Holy Crest characters gain a military icon. This may be better in, you know, a couple months while we see more Holy, but right now I don't find that Greyjoy has a ton of good Holy characters for this to be effective with.
Yeah, to me, that's not the problem. Like, I actually built my Black Sails deck originally with holy characters, and it was mostly holy characters. I was giving Victarion the holy crest with the Driftwood Crown. Then it was playing the holy plots, and it was just a bit too card intensive, but it was interesting, and this plot might have been okay in it. The problem is Power of Faith already gives them military icons, so you're getting military icons for two of your seven plots anyway. It just feels like it's kind of an unnecessary card at two cost. Greyjoy is already running a billion locations, so you have to cut a really good location to fit this one in. I just feel like it doesn't have a good fit in a Greyjoy deck.
Yeah, it definitely lacks something. And looking at it, I just look at it and go, I don't think at this point I would ever play this card. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe one of the listeners could, you know, write us an email and tell us how great this card is. And Tiny, if they wanted to do that, you know, where would they write the email?
I imagine they would write it to summerscomingpodcast@gmail.com. Another card that I feel like fits right into that exact template is the Lannister location, the Arbor Queen, which is a one-cost location, which is better. And it's a warship, any phase. Kneel Arbor Queen to choose a character. Until the end of the phase, that character gets +1 strength for each gold token in your gold pool. This just seems like one of those cards where you already have a million good Lannister locations. And this one, unless you're really running a deck built around it, you're only giving one character a strength boost, and it's not a big strength boost. It just seems worse than something like Tunnels of the Red Keep and other options that you might have.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it'll have a big impact, and I don't think it'll see play at the competitive level at this point. Now, you know, maybe later on we'll see a bunch more stuff to really pump Lannister's ability to generate gold, and then that strength boost will be huge. But at this point, it's not a card I can see in a lot of Lannister decks.
A card that I think is really under the radar right now is Selmy's Scheme. And this is the Targ plot, 4-2-1, so it has decent stats. During power challenges, your army characters gain renown. This seems like it's one of those absolutely amazing closer plots.
Yeah, it didn't jump out to me. It seemed okay. I mean, Targ has some nice army characters. Each of them gaining renown, you know, you're looking at maybe a quick 3 or 4 power swing, but I don't see anything, you know, huge with it at this point, so I think it's a pretty balanced plot.
Yeah, I think it's definitely balanced, but it seems to me that Targ has quite a few good armies. I mean, you have the Long Lances, you have the other guy that's able to jump in, the Company of the Cat. Just in the Targ Knights of the Hollow Hill deck, you're running quite a few armies. I could kind of see this as that, you know, like plot 5, plot 6, closer plot, maybe even in a Dothraki deck with the Dothraki Horde. The Thundering Cavalry are great. The Pike Phalanx are great. It just feels to me like this card might allow a high-claim army deck out of Targ to be viable.
Possibly, and then you could try to, like, rush to victory. Now, I could see something more along the lines of, you know, a summer army deck using stuff like Fairweather Followers and, you know, maybe Hired Swords and some of the cheaper armies in Targ to, you know, rush for power. And Fairweather Followers is great for that because you could use an event to stand them and then get a second challenge in and get more power on them.
The only problem with them is they do not have a power icon.
Right. Oh, yes, and the plot's only the power icon.
Yeah, you'd have to find a way to give them a power icon, which I'm sure you could manage, but it would be difficult.
Yeah. In fact, that's one of the huge things while I'm looking at the armies from Targ is that most of their armies are 4-cost at least if you want to see one with a power icon.
Yeah, and I even said the Company of the Cat, which I love so much, and it also does not have a power icon. So that is a good point, that a lot of the armies you would want to run don't have power icons, but it just does feel like one of these cards that everyone has written off as totally worthless, and I think it might have a place. We'll have to see. The last card I wanted to mention today was the Bera non-unique River Runner. Basically, if you put Vigilant on a card and it doesn't cost a lot, I'm very interested. So this is a 2-cost, 2-strength, power icon with a naval enhancement, ally smuggler. So it's got the great smuggler trait. It's got the amazing ally trait. And its response is after River Runner stands for Vigilance, it gains an intrigue icon until the end of the phase. So most likely, it's actually a 2-icon, vigilant, 2-cost chud. To me, this is pretty darn good for a chud.
Yeah, like you said, I really like anything with the word vigilant on it. And it's an interesting mechanic that it's got, you know, some naval, and the fact that if you win, you get this intrigue icon, which in general, Bera has some issues with.
Yeah, and so it's just to be clear, it's not if River Runner wins. It's if he stands for Vigilant. So if any, you're able to win, you say you do the power challenge with him, then you do a military challenge with somebody else, it can stand him back up and give him an intrigue icon. So that's kind of interesting.
Right, absolutely. You can use him to block, and then you can do a military, he stands back up, you get him in the power, he stands back up. You get him in the intrigue, he stands back up.
Exactly.
So he can be definitely useful that way.
Yeah. I'm thinking, especially if we get a naval deck going out of Bera, this is going to be one of those just automatic 3-ofs in every single Bera naval deck.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very similar to the Greyjoy Ironborn Marauder Chud. Same kind of thing. You're going to see it if you're playing Black Sails. You probably have 2, if not 3 of these for sure.
Yeah, and the fact that he's smuggler is really going to be amazing with Salador San. Just the more smugglers, the better. San is going to be able to just crush any location he wants, and it's going to be pretty crazy.
So what's your prediction then for the upcoming meta? You think there might be a possible smuggler deck coming out of Bera that's going to be more than just Rush?
I'm going to say I think so, and I'm definitely going to say I hope so. I really like Bera. I would like Bera to be good. And to be honest, I cannot stand the Rush mechanic. So I'm really hoping that the Bera deck that does come out is one that's not built around Rush. And it seems like building around smugglers and extra draw with smugglers and location control in a meta where there's a billion locations seems like it could be a really strong build.
Yeah, it would definitely be nice to see Bera coming out with more of their control elements and, you know, stepping forward and becoming, you know, having the ability to play as a control house.
Yeah, I don't really think we're going to get to that point. If we could, Bera, in my opinion, would be the best deck in the meta. If it had control and all the amazing characters it currently has. So I don't think that's going to be an option. But if they can have some semblance of control, just enough control to be able to push through some challenges, I think it could be really strong. Additionally, if there's any more recursion, because we saw Dale Seaworth, he's been spoiled, and he says, after he enters play, choose and return a Bera card from your discard pile to hand. So when he enters play and when he leaves play, you're getting to recur. You can recur with Fiery Kiss. If we get more recursion, captain cards, smuggler cards, the location control of Salador San, I really think we might be able to find a good Baratheon build. So we can all cross our fingers and hope.
Yep, for sure.
So, Darknaj, on a scale of 1 to 5, what do you give this chapter pack?
I'll say a 3. It's a slightly better than average. I'm digging the naval enhancements and the naval mechanic in general. I think it's got some strong support for that mechanic. I think you can now build at least a Greyjoy naval deck. So I'm pretty happy with it. We'll give it a 3 out of 5.
I think I will too. And what I'm most happy about this pack is that FFG seems to have understood what they had to do. If they were going to put a new naval mechanic out and have an agenda for it, and expect anyone to actually play it at regionals, it had to get a ton of early support, and I feel like they've done that. They've given it that early support that it desperately needed to make it viable.
Yeah, I think we'll definitely see some Black Sails deck come regionals.
Yeah, and you might see one from yours truly. I can't quite decide if my Black Sails deck is a funsies deck that has been effective or is a regionals deck that with some tweaking can become one of those world beater decks. Because as we all know, I'm not playing with any deck that's not a world beater. I'm not Darknosh.
I love the description of world beater. Like, what is a world beater deck?
A world beater deck is a deck that pretty much beats everything. It has no auto losses. It has no, like, 90-10 matchups. All the matchups are good, favorable matchups. You might have bad matchups, but those are, like, 70-30, and there aren't many of them.
So, we've seen a couple chapter packs now. We're getting really close to regional season. We might see one more, I think, before regionals start. What do you think is going to be, you know, for those first, we'll say, first two regionals, what are going to be the top five decks, Tidy? Do you have any ideas?
I think the most popular deck is still going to be a version of the Targ Jumper deck. I feel like that's the easiest deck to just say, okay, I either leave in the Long Lances, or sorry, as you would say, the Long Lancers, or the Hatchling's Feast. I just choose one of those, leave it in, and I really have to change nothing, and it's still amazing. I mean, I did that. I took it to our last tournament. I did very well in the tournament, and it's still a really, really strong deck.
I agree. I think that is a really, really strong deck. And, you know, after this discussion, maybe you can tell us a little bit about the tournament that you played in. But for me, I think from that deck, I would definitely almost always go with the Hatchling Feast as my restricted card. I think it gives you the power to control a lot more of the challenges. It gives you that ability to clear the board if you need it. I think it's actually a better choice than the Long Lancers.
Yeah, it's a hard choice. At the tournament, I used Long Lances, and I was very, very happy with my choice all day until I ran into a House of Dreams Aegon's Hill deck, which is essentially an auto loss for my build. The way Bruno had been running that deck, as everyone knows, he was running Confessions and Waste Your Time and all these cards to pull cards out of hand. I haven't been running those cards, and against an Aegon's Hill deck, it was just death, because he would get Aegon's Hill out, he would kill all my jumpers, then he would loop Rainey's Hill over and over and over and kill me with my own dudes as I sat there and cried and had literally nothing in my deck I could do about it.
So how was he looping Rainey's? Was he using Streetways? What was he doing?
Well, first of all, you can play Regroup. Second of all, you play Building Season. And third of all, you run three of them in your deck.
Right, so basically he'd draw one, and then you basically guaranteed three turns of it.
Yes, exactly. And it's really four, because a Targ Knights of the Hollow Hill deck is not going to win in seven turns if you're killing all its jumpers.
Right.
So it was the first game that we played was brutal. It went about eight or nine plots. I was right in the game, but just once he started looping that, it was over. That was at the end of Swiss, and then once we cut to the top four, he just crushed me, and it was like a four-plot, 15-0 game where I didn't get that many characters, and he just killed them all and crushed me like a bug.
So what would be your number two deck, Tiny?
That is a tough choice. It feels like there are a lot of good decks right now. A deck that I think is really strong, and everyone's going to think I'm insane for saying this, is Martell. I feel like with the restriction of the refugees, Knights of the Hollow Hill got infinitely better. By making everyone's setups worse, your trade-off for running Knights of the Hollow Hill is substantially less.
Yeah, absolutely. And ever since the introduction of First Snow, there's been enough control plots in the meta to really minimize that early game setup. And because of that, Knights of the Hollow Hill is an excellent agenda. I really think it should have been on the restricted list, to be honest.
I do too. If you're going to ask me to predict the future, I'm going to say it probably ends up there, just because I think when the new meta shakes out, we're going to see that it's really, really strong. What I will say, though, is what's interesting about the restricted list is it changes a fair amount about the deck. Like, I feel like the deck before could just kind of use Gaston Gray as like a, yeah, that's nice, I got Gaston Gray. If I draw it, I draw it, whatever. Now I feel like Gaston Gray will be the backbone of the deck. That's where a lot of your control is going to come in. But then other losses aren't that big. Like, everyone's bemoaning the loss of the Orphans. I really don't think Hollow Hill cares. So you pull out the Orphans, you put in Prince's Wrath. It's a one-for-one swap. They are both non-repeatable, take all your icons away. It's basically the exact same card in a deck that doesn't rely on setups.
Yeah, exactly. And any deck that didn't use setups or had a reduced setup, the Orphan swap is nothing. So Hollow Hill definitely doesn't feel that bite. So I agree with you. I think we'll see some Martell Hollow Hill. I think we might even see some Martell Brotherhood. I think with the lists getting restricted, Brotherhood could make a resurgence. Now, I'm not saying quite yet that they're going to be winning any regionals. I just think that we're going to see Brotherhood come back a bit.
Yeah, I'm going to go on the I'm going to go on a limb and say Brotherhood will win at least one regional. I'm not sure what kind of build it's going to be, whether it's a really rushy deck, whether it's an Infamy deck, whether it's a Brotherhood agenda deck. I think Barrick is really, really good right now. I mean, the standard ways to contain him are still there to a degree. You can still Nightmare him and then Valor him off. You can still blank him with Mirror Reed. But a lot of the options are gone. I mean, for me, Game of Savas was one of the most scary options for handling him. And that's gone from the meta.
Search and Detain is gone.
Exactly. Search and Detain is gone. A lot of the options for controlling him are gone. And Mira, while she can handle him, the way she really handled him before was to come out, blank him, win a challenge, and no quarter him. That option is gone. You would have to blank him, have a Warcrest on the board, have a Die by the Sword. It just becomes a lot more difficult to pull that off.
Right, and I think with the reduction in, you know, Winter, No Quarter, and Mirror, we might see a little bit less Stark being played and more Hollow Hill. And Hollow Hill has less answers to Barrick in general than some of the older builds.
Yeah, and the nice thing is that Rush decks do really well against the Targ Jumper deck. So I feel like Barrick especially, who's a guy you can't even kill and they have no real answers for him, I kind of feel like a Barrick Rush deck is almost the silver bullet to a Targ Knights of the Hollow Hill deck. So it might be interesting that in a meta dominated by that Targ deck, someone might show up with a Rush Barrick deck and just crush everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Greyjoy Winter is going to be one of the top five builds now for sure. I don't feel like they lost a lot. I think you can just take the refugees out, replace them by three other low-cost, you know, good Greyjoy characters, and you have a strong Winter choke deck still.
I think Greyjoy plus any agenda is perhaps the best house in the meta. They were already, in my opinion, really, really strong, and they lost nothing. The only way they lost anything is if you play Winter. Basically, I was, you know, so blessed with the Greyjoy restricted list before that I could just throw Search and Detain in as one of those, whatever, Search and Detain's a great plot, I might as well put it in, I don't have any other restricted card. So in most of my Greyjoy decks, I've just chosen the refugees, get a ridiculous advantage on the flop over my opponents, especially if you're running a naval deck, you're getting all this super high claim, you're going to win, because since you have the refugees, you have a better flop. It just feels like almost any Greyjoy deck is going to be really, really strong right now.
Yeah, I agree. So I think we're going to see Greyjoy Choke, Greyjoy Black Sails, and then we might see some Stark Knight. And I think that basically sums up what we're going to see as your top four or five. And just hanging below that is going to be your Lannister Neil.
I think Lannister Neil creeps into the top five now. It kind of feels to me that with a reduced setup, there are less cards you have to control on the board to be able to get that whole Lannister control going. And Lannister Neil, yeah, it loses either Pentoshi Manor or Castellan, but I don't know. I mean, Castellan is a three-cost ally. I liked him before, but I always kind of felt like I'm forced to use him. But oftentimes he's like a one-off. You just play him, then he gets dissensioned. So I'm not absolutely devastated to lose Castellan. I kind of feel like there's other good characters that maybe I could put in that three-cost slot.
Yeah, for me, I'd still go with Castellan. I think, you know, we might see a little bit less dissension now that there's less refugees in the environment. But even if we don't, Castellan was, you know, the backbone a lot of these Neil builds. And I still think he is. So I can still see him being the choice for, you know, most people playing heavy Neil. Now, the one big difference I find with the heavy Neil compared to, say, like the old Martell icon control builds is that Neil is even a softer control than icon removal. You know, soft control in general is your character's going to survive, he's still going to be on the board, but I find that there's a lot more counters to Neil, lots of different ways to stand characters back up, whether it's, you know, some of the Baratheon locations or some of the Baratheon events or some of the other events outside of Baratheon, neutral event that can stand characters with crests, etc. So I think that, you know, as the meta adapts, you might see some early strong placements from these Lannister Neil decks, but then as people adapt, it's very easy to find some solutions to that problem.
I agree. And because of that, I'm not necessarily saying I think it's going to be a Neil deck. I mean, I think any good Lannister deck will have Neil in it. But one of the things I look at with Lannister is they have really amazing attachments. And I just feel like since attachments are going to be viable again, cards like Devious Intentions, Enslaved, and Widow's Wail, it just feels like all of these attachments might be able to give Lannister an even bigger leg up than it had before.
Right. The problem is, a lot of times when you swap out attachments, you're swapping out event slots for them because both of them can't be used on setup. So to find that balance of attachments plus events that would let you continue to kneel your opponents can be a tough one.
I agree, but I don't know. There's not that many. There's a lot of good events in Lannister, but there's a lot of events that I was always kind of like, I don't know. I mean, of course I love You Killed the Wrong Dwarf, but stuff like I'm You Writ Small is oftentimes more acute than good. I like House Divided a lot, but maybe not as much as Widow's Wail. I mean, Widow's Wail is draw. Draw is always amazing.
Yeah, but the thing is with Lannister, they already have, you know, Goldtooth Mines. They already have Tolman. I could see putting in one of Widow's Wail, but are you gonna start putting in two, three Widow's Wail into your decks?
I'm probably going to put two in because it's plus two strength also. So I'm looking at a deck where Cersei is five strength. You're drawing from her also winning challenges. She's winning three challenges a turn. So you could conceivably just put one power on the Widow's Wail. It just seems like you can really make one of these, not really a Voltron Cersei deck, but Cersei really strong.
Yeah, I can definitely see some attachments going in and using that rush element of Cersei to get your draw and while still having a strong Neil component.
Yeah, so I'm not saying it's going to be the best deck in the meta, but I think it's in the running for that upper crust decks. And I feel like there's a lot more decks than before that are in that running. And I think, unlike before when I went to a tournament, I felt like I knew every deck I was going to see. If I saw a deck I didn't expect, it was probably awful. Now I feel like there's a lot of decks that I'm not going to expect that are still going to be pretty darn good decks. They might not be the most efficient builds, but surprise factor can be really valuable if a deck is still actually a strong deck and a surprise.
Yeah, for sure. I think we'll definitely early on see that larger variety of decks and hopefully some really innovative ones.
Yep, that's what I'm hoping as well. All right, well, as I alluded to, I played in what I think was the very first tournament with a new FAQ. The FAQ dropped, I think it was Wednesday, and we had our tournament that Saturday. And it made for a very interesting tournament. On the one hand, we had decided ahead of time that we were not using the FAQ. It was just too close, and then it dropped, and all the best players got together and said, why aren't we using the FAQ? This is kind of stupid to just stick with the old one. Let's experiment with a new one. Let's treat this as a tune-up for regionals. So we all got together and decided we're using the new FAQ, but we told the other players, you can do whatever you want. And this made for a very interesting experiment that I wasn't expecting. And that is, what happens when you let a lesser skilled player use 18 restricted cards in a deck and you only get 3?
He does all right.
He sure does. And so it was a very interesting event where we had a couple players who are fine players. They're not bad players, but the point is they're newer players. And by being able to use so many restricted cards, in fact, one guy is a little bit less knowledgeable about the restricted list, and he was using Fear of Winter and Narrow Escape, and then also a ton of restricted cards from the new FAQ. So, like, a third of this guy's deck was restricted cards.
And right, I think I saw that deck. What's he up? Had a bunch of, I think I saw that deck posted. I think he had a bunch of one of restricted cards, like a single Narrow Escape.
Perhaps. I don't remember him having a single Narrow Escape, but it's entirely possible. But essentially, it did provide a bit more parity. Now, I'm not saying that this should be a template for future tournaments, future events, but it is an interesting possibility to consider that if you are having this huge problem in your meta, and there's people that are really complaining that the new players are dominating, you could try this for one event. You know, just say, okay, for this one single event, we're going to try something crazy, and you can run, you know, as many restricted cards as you want from this particular list, not going all the way back in time. But it could be interesting.
So that, it sounds interesting. So what were your early matchups like?
First of all, I was really rusty. The night before the event, Bruno came over and my friend Chris came over, the first and greatest co-host on Summer's Coming. No offense, Dark Nash. But they came over and they essentially mocked me for 3 hours as I played so terribly. It was unbelievable. I'd been playing a lot of Star Wars. I'd kind of just let Game of Thrones go for now since there wasn't really anything to play for. And I was doing horrible things. Like, there was one example where I marshaled, Bruno marshaled, and I attempted to marshal again. And Bruno just looked at me and was like, have you ever played this game before? And it was just one of those moments where I was like, okay, I'm not the Lakers where they could just be terrible and not play forever and then just turn it on for the playoffs and dominate. That's not who I am. I need to be dialed in farther ahead of time. So I was really worried that I would be awful at the event. But I did all right. My first round, I made a couple mistakes against the Lannister House of Dreams deck. Ended up winning. It was an interesting deck because if you're playing House of Dreams, it's really versatile in Lannister. You can start Iron Throne against Martell. You can start Tunnels against Targ. You have a plethora of options of different locations you can start, which is quite interesting.
Were there any other matches that really stood out?
So in round two, I ended up playing against another Targ Knights of the Hollow Hill deck. It was more of a Shadows deck with a lot of burn that was coming out of Shadows. And that game was a little bit closer, but it was one of those games where Long Lances and Street Waifs really shined. I was able to just keep getting back the cards I needed. He was able to burn some cards off, but then I would ambush from the plains them back and use the Street Waif and get all the other cards back. In round three, I played another Lannister deck. It was a Power Behind the Throne. That was, again, one of those games where the Long Lances really shined. I basically won every single challenge in the game pretty much and was able to get that early start, get a bunch of influence out, and just jump a whole slew of guys out. And my opponent was a bit astonished at how well the deck synergized that particular game. And then in round four, I played another Lannister deck. So I guess I played 3 Lannister decks on the day. I was able to win that one and went into the top 4 against another Targ Aegon's Hill deck. And essentially in this tournament, Targ Knights of the Hollow Hill was the dominant deck type. Both Bruno and I played it. We went to the top 4. Bruno won with his against Ryan's Targ Aegon's Hill deck. So the question coming out of the event was, Is Targ just that much over the curve, or was it more of a function of the FAQ coming out 3 days ahead and people just kind of going, well, I've got this Targ deck that I don't have to change that much? Because that's essentially what happened with me. That's essentially what happened with Bruno. We just didn't have time to remake decks in the middle of our jobs in the quarter. So we had to just kind of roll with what we had.
Yeah, I think that's a question that will only be answered by seeing some of these regionals, hopefully in the next couple months.
Yeah, definitely. So the first tournament post-FAQ, dominated by Targ Knights of the Hollow Hill. But we will have to see if that's how regional season plays out. So if you have any questions for Dark Naj or myself, feel free to email summerscomingpodcast@gmail.com. And Dark Naj loves those crazy Shaga decks, and I always love taking a look at those efficient Jamie decks. So send your decks over, we'll take a look. And until next time, stay classy, Westeros.